Chapter 14. Dreams and Nightmares. At the sight of Nynaeve and Elaine, Egwene did not step out of the dream. She leaped out. Not back to her sleeping body in Cairhien, the night was too young yet, but to a vast blackness filled with twinkling pinpricks of light, more by far than the number of stars in the clearest sky, each sharp and distinct as far as the eye could see. If she had had eyes here, that was. Formless, she floated in the infinity between Tel Arunriod and the waking world, the narrow gap between dream and reality. Had she possessed a heart here, it would have been pounding like a mad drum. She did not think they had seen her, but what under the light were they doing there, in a part of the tower that held nothing of interest? On these nightly excursions, she carefully avoided the Ammerlin's study, the novices' quarters, even the accepted's quarters. It always seemed that if Nynaeve or Elaine or both were not in one of those places, someone else was. She could have approached Nynaeve or Elaine, of course. They certainly knew how to keep secrets, but something told her not to. She had dreamed of doing it, and it always seemed a nightmare. Not the sort that woke you in a cold sweat, but the kind that made you twist fretfully. Those other women. Did the Aes Sedai and Salidar know strangers wandered the tower in the world of dreams? Strange to her, at least. If they did not, she had no way to warn them, no way she could take. It was all so frustrating. The great spangled ocean of darkness swirled around her, seeming to move while she stood still. A fish at home in that ocean, she swam confidently, without really needing to think about it any more than the fish did. Those flickering lights were dreams, all the dreams of all the people of the world. Of all worlds, places that were not quite the world she knew, worlds nothing like it at all. Verin Sedai first told her of those, the wise ones affirmed it was so, and she herself had glimpsed things peeking in that she simply could not credit, not even in a dream. Not nightmares, those always seemed washed in red or blue, or a murky gray like deep shadows, but filled with impossible things. Better to avoid them. Clearly she did not belong in those worlds. Peering into such a dream was like suddenly being surrounded by broken mirrors, everything whirling and no way to tell up from down. It made her want to empty her stomach, and if she did not have one here, she would again on stepping back into her body. Sicking up was no way to wake yourself. She had learned a few things alone like this, added to what the wise ones had taught her, even ventured where they would have barred the way. And yet, she had no doubt she would know more, much more, if she had had a dreamwalker looking over her shoulder. Telling her that this was too dangerous yet, and that forbidden altogether, true, yet suggesting what to try as well. Long past the simple things, easily puzzled out, well, not exactly easily, never that. She had reached a point where she could reason the next step on her own, but they were steps the wise one dreamwalkers had taken long ago. What took her a month to master for herself, they could teach in a night, in an hour. When they decided she was ready. Never until then. It galled so, when all she wanted was to learn everything right now. Each light looked identical to every other, yet she had learned to recognize a handful. How, exactly, she did not know, a thing that irked her no end. Even the wise ones did not know that. Still, once she identified which dream belonged to which person, she could find that person's dreams again like an arrow to the target, no matter if they went to the other side of the world. That light was Berylaine, the first of Mayenne, the woman Rand had put in charge of Cairhien. Looking into Berylaine's dreams made Egwene uncomfortable. Usually they were no different from any other woman's. Any woman interested equally in power, politics, and the latest fashion in dresses. But sometimes Berylaine dreamed of men, even men Egwene knew, in a way that made Egwene blush to remember. And that slightly muted glow over there was Rand, his dreams guarded behind a ward woven of Sidene. She almost stopped. It piqued her that something she could not see or feel could shut her out like a stone wall, but instead let it pass. Another night of futility held no attraction. This place skewed distance the way Telairan Riod did time. Rand was sleeping in Camelin, unless he had jaunted to Tyr, a thing she very much wanted to know how he did. But only a little way from his dream, Egwene picked out another light she recognized. There, in Cairhien, hundreds of leagues from Rand. Wherever Rand was, she knew for a fact it was not Cairhien this night. How did he do it? The field of lights streaked by as Egwene darted away from the Wise One's dream. Had she seen Amys and Melaine as well, she might not have fled. But if the other two dreamwalkers were not asleep and dreaming, they could be dreamwalking. One of them might be where she was, even ready to swoop down and haul her out of the dream, or into the dreamwalker's own dream. She doubted she could stop them, not yet. She would be at the other's mercy, just a part of her dream. Holding on to yourself inside someone else's dream was hard enough when the dreamer was an ordinary person with no idea what was going on, although no harder than getting out before they stopped dreaming of you, which they were unlikely to do before waking with you actually there in the dream. With a dreamwalker, as aware of her dreams as of the walking world, it was impossible, and that would be the best part of it. It dawned on her that she was being foolish. Running was useless. If Amys or Melaine had found her, she would be somewhere else already. For that matter, she could be racing right toward them. The rush of lights by her did not slow, it simply stopped dead. That was the way here. Vexed, she considered what to do next. Aside from teaching herself what she could of Telairan Riod, her main purpose here was to glean a few scraps of events in the world. At times it seemed the Wise Ones would not tell her whether the sun was up if she could not see for herself. They said she must not become agitated. How could she avoid it, fretting over what she did not know? That was what she had been doing in the White Tower, trying to pick up some hint of Elida's intentions. And Alviarin's. Hints were the best she had been able to find, and few of those. She hated not knowing. Ignorance was like suddenly going blind and deaf. Well, the whole tower was off her list now. It had to be when she could no longer be certain which parts were safe. The rest of Tar Valon had been struck off already, after the fourth time she nearly walked into a copper-skinned woman, this time nodding in satisfaction, as, of all things, she studied a stable that seemed freshly painted blue. Whoever she was, she had not dreamed herself into Telairan Riod for a moment by accident. She did not vanish the way a casual dreamer did, and she appeared made of mist. Using a Turang Rial, obviously, which meant she was almost certainly Aes Sedai. Egwene knew of only one Turang Rial that allowed access to the world of dreams without channeling, and Nynaeve and Elaine had that. The willowy woman had not been Aes Sedai long, though. Quite beautiful, and wearing a scandalously thin dress, she appeared Nynaeve's age, not ageless. Egwene might have tried following her. She might be Black Aja, after all. They had stolen Dream Turang Rial, but balancing the risk of being found out, even captured, against the fact that she could tell no one anything she learned, not until she could talk to Nynaeve and Elaine again, not unless she discovered something so dire that everything depended on it. After all, the Black Aja was Aes Sedai business. Quite aside from any other reasons for keeping secrets, she could not tell just anyone. It was no choice at all. Absently, she studied the nearest lights in the blackness. She did not recognize any of them. They held absolutely still around her, shimmering stars frozen in clear black ice. There were too many strangers in the world of dreams lately to suit her peace of mind. Two, but that was too many. The copper-skinned woman and another, a sturdily pretty woman who moved with a purposeful stride, blue-eyed and with a determined face. The determined woman, as Egwene thought of her, must be able to enter Telairan Riod on her own. She seemed solid, not carved from fog. And whoever she was, for whatever reason she was there, she was about the tower more often than Nynaeve and Elaine and Shiriam and the rest put together. She seemed to appear everywhere. In addition to the tower, she had nearly surprised Egwene on her last trip to Tyr. Not on a meeting night, of course. The woman had been stalking about the heart of the stone, muttering to herself angrily, and she had been in Camelin on Egwene's last 2 trips. The chances the determined woman was Black Aja were as great as with the other, but then again either could be from Salidar, or both, though Egwene had never seen them together, or with anyone from Salidar. For that matter, either could be from the tower itself. Divisions enough there for one side to be spying on another, and sooner or later the Tower Aes Sedai would learn of Tel Arun Riad if they had not already. The two strangers presented nothing but questions without answers. The only thing Egwene could think to do was avoid them. Of course she tried to avoid everyone in the world of dreams of late. She had taken to looking over her shoulder, to thinking somebody was sneaking up behind her, to seeing things. She thought she had caught glimpses of Rand, of Perrin, even Lan, half seen out of the corner of her eye. Imagination, of course, or maybe the chance touch of their dreams, but on top of everything else it had her jumpy as a cat in a dog yard. She frowned, or would have, had she a face. One of those lights looked not familiar, she did not know it, but it seemed to attract her. Wherever her gaze shifted, it came back to that same sparkling pinpoint. Perhaps she could try finding Salidar again. That meant waiting for Nynaeve and Elaine to leave Tel Arun Riad. She knew their dreams by sight, of course. In her sleep, she thought with a silent giggle. And so far a dozen attempts to locate Salidar that way had produced as much result as trying to get through the ward around Rand's dreams. Distance and location here really bore no relation to anything in the waking world. Amis said there was no distance or location here. On the other hand, it was as good as any. Startlingly, the pinpoint her gaze kept returning to began to drift toward her, swelling until what had been a distant star quickly became a full white moon. A spark of fear lit inside her. Touching a dream, peeking inside, was easy. A finger to the surface of water, a touch so light that the water rose to the finger, but the surface was never broken. Yet it was all supposed to be at her volition. A dreamwalker sought the dream. The dream did not seek her. She willed it to go away, willed the starry scape to move. Only that one light moved, expanding to fill her vision with white light. Frantically she tried to pull away. White light, nothing but white light, absorbing her. She blinked, staring in amazement. Around her stretched a forest of great white columns. Most of it seemed fuzzy, indistinct, especially what was far away. But one thing sharp and real was Gawain, trotting across the white-tiled floor toward her in a plain green coat, anxiety and relief mingled on his face. It was nearly Gawain's face, anyway. Gawain might not be as gorgeous as his half-brother Galad, but he was still a handsome man. Yet this face seemed ordinary. She tried to move, and could not to any extent. Her back was to one of the columns, and chains held her wrists above her head. This must be Gawain's dream. Out of all those countless points of light, she had stopped near his, and somehow been drawn in. How was a question for later. Now she wanted to know why he would dream of holding her captive. Firmly she fixed the truth in her mind. This was a dream, someone else's dream. She was herself, not whatever it was he wanted her to be. She did not accept the reality of anything here. Nothing here touched the true her. Those truths repeated like a chant in her head. It made thinking of anything else difficult, but so long as she held them hard, she could risk staying. At least long enough to find out what peculiar oddities the man had rolling around in his head. Holding her captive! Abruptly a huge gout of flame bloomed on the floor tiles, and acrid yellow smoke billowed. Rand stepped out of that inferno, garbed in gold-embroidered red like a king, facing Gawain, and the fire and smoke vanished. Only it hardly seemed Rand at all. The real Rand was of a height and size with Gawain, but this image overtopped Gawain by a head. The face was just vaguely Rand's, coarser and harder than it should be, the cold face of a murderer. This man wore a sneer.
"You will not have her," he snarled.
"You will not keep her," Gawain replied calmly, and suddenly both men held swords.
Egwene gaped. Not Gawain holding her prisoner. He dreamed of rescuing her. From Rand. Time to leave this madness. She concentrated on being outside, back in the darkness, looking at this from the outside. Nothing happened. Swords met with a clash, and the two men danced a deadly dance. Deadly if it had not been a dream, anyway. It was all nonsense. Dreaming a sword fight, of all things. And it was not a nightmare. Everything looked normal, if fuzzy, not washed in color. A man's dreams are a maze even he cannot know, Bear had told her once. Egwene closed her eyes, focused her entire mind. Outside. She was outside, looking in. No room for anything else in her head. Outside, looking in. Outside, looking in. Outside! She opened her eyes once more. The fight was reaching its climax. Gawain's blade drove into Rand's chest, and as Rand sagged, the steel pulled free, swept in a shining arc. Rand's head spun across the floor almost to her feet. It came to rest, staring up at her. A scream bubbled in her throat before she could quell it. A dream. Just a dream. But those dead, staring eyes seemed very real. Then Gawain was in front of her, sword back in its scabbard. Rand's head and body were gone. Gawain reached for the manacles holding her, and they were gone, too.
"I knew you would come," she breathed, and gave a start.
She was herself. She would not give in to this, not for a moment, or she would be well and truly trapped. Smiling, Gawain scooped her up into his arms.
"I'm glad you knew it," he said. "I would have come sooner if I could. I should never have left you in danger so long. Can you forgive me?"
"I can forgive you anything."
There were two Egwenes now, one snuggling contentedly in Gawain's arms as he carried her down a palace corridor lined with colorful tapestries and great mirrors in ornately gilded frames, the other riding in the back of the first's head. This was becoming serious. Concentrate as hard as she would on being outside, she stayed there, watching through the eyes of a second her. Hurriedly, she stifled curiosity as to what Gawain dreamed about her. That sort of interest was dangerous. She accepted none of this. But none of it changed. The corridor appeared quite real where she looked, though what was seen from the corner of her eyes seemed hazy. Her own image glimpsed in a mirror caught her attention. She would have twisted to stare at it as they passed, but she was only a passenger in the head of the woman of Gawain's dreams. The woman reflected for that instant had been her. There was no feature she could have pointed to and said it differed in the slightest from her real face, but somehow the whole was... beautiful was the only word. Stunningly so. Was that how Gawain saw her? No, no curiosity. Outside. Between one stride and the next, the corridor became a hillside carpeted in wildflowers, their scent rich on a soft breeze. The real Egwene gave a mental start. Had she done that? The barrier between her and the other thinned. She focused furiously. It was not real. She refused to accept it. She was herself. Outside. She wanted to be outside, looking in. Gently, Gawain laid her down on a cloak already spread there on the hillside, in the manner of things in dreams. Kneeling beside her, he brushed a strand of hair from her cheek, let his fingers trail back to the corner of her mouth. Focusing on anything was very hard. She might have no control over the body she rode in, but she felt what it did, and his fingers seemed to make sparks jump.
"My heart is yours," he intoned softly. "My soul, my everything."
His coat was scarlet now, elaborately worked in gold leaves and silver lions. He made grand gestures, touching head or heart.
"When I think of you, there is no room for any other thought. Your perfume fills my brain and sets my blood afire. My heart pounds till I could not hear the world crack apart. You are my sun and my moon and my stars, my heaven and earth, more precious to me than life or breath or..."
Abruptly he stopped, grimacing.
"You sound a fool," he muttered to himself.
Egwene would have disagreed had she had any control over her vocal cords. It was very nice hearing those things, even if they were a bit over the top. Just a bit. When he grimaced, she felt a loosening, but flick. Gently, Gawain laid her down on a cloak already spread there on the hillside in the manner of things in dreams. Kneeling beside her, he brushed a strand of hair from her cheek, let his fingers trail back to the corner of her mouth. She might have no control over the body she rode in, but she could feel what it felt, and his fingers seemed to make sparks jump. No! She could not let herself accept any part of his dream. His face was a map of pain, his coat stark gray. His hands rested on his knees in fists.
"I have no right to speak to you as I might wish," he said stiffly. "My brother loves you, and I know Galad is in agony with fear for you. He is a white cloak at least half because he thinks the Aes Sedai have misused you. I know he..."
Gawain's eyes squeezed shut.
"Oh, light, help me," he moaned. Flick.
Gently, Gawain laid her down on a cloak already spread there on the hillside in the manner of things in dreams. Kneeling beside her, he brushed a strand of hair from her cheek, let his fingers trail back to the corner of her mouth. No! She was losing the little control she had. She had to get out. What are you afraid of? She was not sure whether that was her thought or the other Egwene's. The barrier between them was gauze now.
This is Gawain. Gawain!
"I love you," he said hesitantly.
In the green coat again, still less handsome than he really was, he plucked at one of his buttons before letting his hand drop. He looked at her as though afraid of what he might see on her face, hiding it, but not well.
"I have never said that to another woman, never wanted to say it. You have no idea how hard it is to say to you. Not that I don't want to," he added hastily, flinging a hand toward her. "But to say it with no encouragement is like tossing aside my sword and baring my chest for a blade. Not that I think you would..." "Light! I can't say this properly. Is there any chance that you might come in time to feel some regard for me? Something... more than friendship?"
"You sweet idiot," she laughed softly. "I love you. I love you,"
echoed in the part of her that was really her. She felt the barrier vanishing, had a moment to realize she did not care, and then there was only one Egwene again, an Egwene who happily twined her arms around Gawain's neck. Sitting on the stool in the dim moonlight, Nynaeve stuffed a yawn back into her mouth with her knuckles and blinked eyes that felt full of sand. This was going to work. Oh, yes, it was. She would fall asleep saying hello to Theodrin, if not before. Her chin sank, and she jerked herself to her feet. The stool had begun feeling like stone. Her bottom had gone numb, but that discomfort was apparently not enough anymore. Perhaps a walk outside. Arms outstretched, she felt her way to the door. Abruptly, a distant scream shattered the night, and as it did, the stool struck her hard in the back, knocking her against the rough door with a startled scream of her own. Stunned, she stared at the stool, lying on its side on the floor now, one leg shoved awry. "What is it?" Elaine cried, coming bolt upright in her bed. More screams and shouts sounded through Salidar, some from inside their own house, and a vague rumble and clatter that seemed to come from everywhere. Nynaeve's empty bed rattled, then slid a foot across the floor. Elaine's heaved, nearly tossing her out. "A bubble of evil." Nynaeve was startled at how cool she sounded. There was no point leaping about and flapping her arms, but inside she was doing just that. "We have to wake anybody who's still asleep." She did not know how anyone could sleep through this racket, but those who did could die before they knew it. Not waiting for a reply, she hurried out and pushed open the next door down the hall, and ducked as a white washbasin hurtled through the space where her head had been, to smash against the wall behind her. Four women shared this room, in two beds a little larger than her own. Now one bed lay with its legs in the air, two women trying to crawl from beneath it. On the other, Imara and Ranella, another accepted, thrashed and made choking sounds, wrapped tight in their own bedsheet. Nynaeve grabbed the first woman out from under the overturned bed, a gaping, skinny serving woman named Melinda, and shoved her toward the door.
"Go! Wake anybody in the house still sleeping and help anybody you can. Go!"
Melinda went, stumbling, and Nynaeve hauled her trembling sleeping companion to her feet.
"Help me, Satina. Help me with Emar and Ranella."
Trembling she might have been, but the plump woman nodded and set to with a will. It was not just a matter of unwinding the sheet, of course. The thing seemed alive, like a vine that would tighten until it crushed what it held. Nynaeve and Satina together barely peeled it away from the two women's throats. Then the pitcher leaped from the washstand to crash against the ceiling. Satina jumped and lost her hold, and the sheet snapped out of Nynaeve's hands, right back where it had been. The two women's struggles were weakening. One made a rattling noise in her throat, the other no sound at all. Even by the little moonlight that came through the window, their faces seemed swollen and dark. Seizing the sheet again with both hands, Nynaeve opened herself to Saidar and found nothing.
"I'm surrendering, burn you! I am surrendering! I need the power!"
Nothing. The bed shimmied against her knees and Satina squeaked.
"Don't just stand there," Nynaeve snapped. "Help me."
Abruptly, the sheet jerked out of her grip once more, but instead of winding around Emara and Ronella again, it pulled the other way so hard they tumbled over one another, nearly blurring as it unwound. Noticing Elaine in the doorway, Nynaeve closed her mouth with a click of teeth. The sheet hung from the ceiling. The power. Of course.
"Everybody's awake," Elaine said, handing her a robe. She already had one over her own shift. "A few bruises and scrapes, one or two nasty cuts to be seen to when there's time, and I think everybody is going to have bad dreams for a few days, but that's the extent of it. Here."
Screams and shouts still rang through the night. Satina jumped again as Elaine let the sheet fall, but it just lay there on the floor. The overturned bed shifted, though, creaking. Elaine bent over the groaning women on the bed.
"I think they're dizzy, mainly. Satina, help me get them on their feet."
Nynaeve glowered at the robe in her hands. Well, they might be dizzy, spun about like tops.
Light, but she was useless. Rushing in like a fool to take charge.
Without the power, she was just useless.
"Nynaeve, could you give me a hand?"
Elaine held a swaying Emara upright, while Satina was more than half carrying Ronella to the door.
"I think Imara's going to sick up, and it better be outside. I think the chamber pots are broken."
The smell said she was right. Pottery grated against the floor, trying to slither out from under the overturned bed. Nynaeve thrust her arms angrily into her robe. She could sense the source now, a warm glow just out of sight. But she deliberately ignored it. She had done without the power for years. She could do without it now. Lifting Amara's free arm over her shoulder, she helped guide the moaning woman toward the street. They almost made it. When they got outside after wiping Amara's mouth, everyone else was already huddled together in front of the house, in robes or whatever they had slept in. The still full moon, hanging in a clear sky, gave a bright light. People were spilling out of the other houses in a bedlam of bellows and shrieks. One board in a fence rattled, then another. A bucket suddenly went bouncing down the street. A cart loaded with firewood abruptly rolled forward, shafts plowing shallow furrows in the hard ground. Smoke began to rise from a house down the way, and voices began shouting for water. The dark shape of someone lying in the street drew Nynaeve. One of the night watchmen, by the flickering lantern near his outstretched hand. She could see his staring eyes glittering in the moonlight, the blood covering his face, the dent in the side of his head where something had struck him like an axe. She felt his throat for a pulse anyway. She wanted to howl with fury. People should die after a long life, in their own beds, surrounded by family and friends. Anything else was waste, pure miserable waste.
"So you found Saidar tonight, Nynaeve. Good."
Nynaeve jumped and stared up at Anaya. She did hold Saidar, she realized, and useless even with it. Rising, she wearily dusted her knees and tried not to look at the dead man. If she had been quicker, could it have made a difference? The glow of the power surrounded Anaya, but not only her. The single light enveloped as well two more fully clothed Aes Sedai, an accepted in a robe, and three novices, two in their shifts. One of those in her shift was Nicola. Nynaeve could see other glowing groups, dozens and dozens of them, moving in the street. Some seemed all Aes Sedai, but most not. "Open yourself to linking," Anaya went on. "And you, Elaine, and what is wrong with Imara and Ronella?" On learning they were just dizzy, she muttered something under her breath, then told them to find a circle and link with it as soon as their heads were steady. Hurriedly she chose out four more accepted from the cluster around Elaine. "Samael, if it is him instead of one of the others, will learn we are far from helpless. Quickly now. Embrace the source, but hold yourself at the point of embracing. You are open and yielding." "This isn't one of the Forsaken," Nynaeve began, but the motherly Aes Sedai cut her off firmly. "Don't argue, child, just open yourself. We have expected an attack, if not exactly like this, and planned for it. Quickly, child, there is no time to squander on idle chatter." Snapping her mouth shut, Nynaeve tried to put herself on that brink where you embraced Sidar on the moment of surrender. It was not easy. Twice she felt the power flow not just into her, but through her into Anaya, and twice it snapped back. Anaya's mouth tightened. She stared at Nynaeve as though thinking she did it on purpose. The third time was like being seized by the scruff of the neck. Sidar swept through Nynaeve to Anaya, and when she attempted to pull back, it was her, she realized, not the flow itself. Her flow was held, melting into a larger. A sense of awe came over her. She found herself looking at the faces of the others, wondering if they felt the same. She was a part of something more than herself, greater than herself. Not just the one power. Emotions tumbled in her head. Fear and hope and relief. And yes, awe, more than any other. A sense of calm that had to come from the Aes Sedai, and she could not tell which emotions were hers. It should have been chilling, but she felt closer to these women than she could have to any sister, as if they were all one flesh. A lanky gray named Ashmanela smiled warmly at her, seemingly recognizing her thoughts. Nynaeve's breath caught as it occurred to her that she no longer felt angry. Anger had vanished, swallowed in wonder. Yet somehow, now that control had passed to the blue sister, the flow of Sidar continued. Her eyes fell on Nicola and found no sisterly smile, only that considering study. Reflexively, Nynaeve tried to pull back from the link, and nothing happened. Until Anaya broke the circle, she was part of it, and that was that. Elaine joined much more easily, first slipping the silver bracelet into her robe's pocket. Cold sweat broke out on Nynaeve's face. What might have happened had Elaine entered the link already linked to Mogedion by the Eidam? She had no notion, which only made the question worse. Nicola frowned from Nynaeve to Elaine. Surely she could not separate out which emotions were which, not when Nynaeve could not tell her own. The final two were brought into the circle just as easily. Shimoku, a pretty dark-eyed Kandori who had become accepted just before the tower divided, and Kalindin, a Taraboner with her black hair and a multitude of thin braids, who had been accepted for a good 10 years. A woman little more than a novice, and another who struggled for every scrap she learned, but they had no trouble linking. Suddenly Nicola spoke, sounding half asleep. "The lion sword, the dedicated spear, she who sees beyond, three on the boat, and he who is dead yet lives. The great battle done, but the world not done with battle. The land divided by the return, and the guardians balance the servants. The future teeters on the edge of a blade." Anaya stared at her. "What was that, child?" Nicola blinked. "Did I say something, Aes Sedai?" she asked weakly. "I feel peculiar." "Well, if you're going to be sick..." Anaya said briskly. "Get it over with.
Linking takes some women funny the first time. We have no time to coddle your stomach. As if to prove it, she gathered her skirts and started down the street. Stay close now, all of you, and sing out if you see something that needs dealing with.
That was hardly a problem. People milled about in the streets, crying out to know what was happening, or just crying out, and things moved. Doors slammed and windows banged open with no one touching them. Crashes and splinterings came from inside the houses. Pots, tools, stones, anything loose might leap or dart at any moment. A stout cook in her shift snagged a hurtling bucket out of the air with a nearly hysterical laugh. But when a pale, lean fellow in his small clothes tried to knock away a stick of firewood, the result was the crack of his arm breaking. Ropes writhed their way about legs and arms, and even people's clothes began to crawl. They found a hairy man with his shirt wrapped around his head, flailing about so hard he kept at bay those who were trying to peel it away before it smothered him. A woman who had managed to pull on a dress, if not fasten it up, clung to the thatch on the edge of a roof, shrieking at the top of her lungs as the dress tried to haul her across the house, or maybe into the sky. Dealing with these things proved no more problem than finding them. The flows of power Anaya wielded through the link, and those from other circles, would have had no trouble stopping a herd of charging bulls, much less a kettle that took it in its mind to fly. And once a thing was stopped, whether by the power or by hand, it seldom stirred again. There were just so many of them. There was not even time to stop for healing unless a life was in danger. Bruises, bleeding, and broken bones had to wait while another fence board was slapped to the ground, hopefully before it split a head. Another barrel halted in its wild rolling before it broke a leg. A sense of frustration grew in Nynaeve. So many things to quell, all small, but a man with his skull cracked by a frying pan or a woman strangled by her own shift was as dead as someone struck down by the power. It was not just her frustration. She thought it came from every woman in the circle, even the Aes Sedai. But all she could do was march along with the others, watch Anaya weave the combination of their flows to battle a thousand small dangers. Nynaeve lost herself in being a conduit, in being one with a dozen other women. Finally, Anaya halted, frowning. The link dissolving caught Nynaeve by surprise. For a moment she sagged where she stood, staring uncomprehendingly. Moans and weeping had replaced screams and shouts. The palely lit street was still, except for people trying to help the injured. By the moon, less than an hour had passed, but it seemed to Nynaeve like 10. Her back ached where the stool had hit her, her knees wobbled, her eyes felt scrubbed. She yawned so hard she thought her ears would pop.
"Not at all what I expected from one of the Forsaken," Anaya muttered only half under her breath.
She sounded tired, too, but she launched right into the next thing to be done, catching Nicola by the shoulder.
"You can hardly stand. Bed for you. Off you go, child. I want to speak to you first thing in the morning before breakfast. Angla, you stay. You can link again and lend a little strength for the healing. Lanita, bed."
"It wasn't the Forsaken," Nynaeve said. Mumbled, really. Like she was tired. "It was a bubble of evil." The three Aes Sedai stared at her. For that matter, so did the rest of the Accepted, except for Elaine, and the novices, too. Even Nicola, who had not yet gone. For once, Nynaeve did not care how much the woman weighed her with her eyes. She was too sleepy to care.
"We saw one in Tyr," Elaine said. "In the stone."
Only the aftermath, really, but that was closer than either of them had ever hoped to be again.
"If Samael attacked us, he wouldn't toss sticks about."
Ashmanela exchanged unreadable glances with Baratine, a green who managed to make rail thin look gracefully slender and a long nose look elegant. Anaya never flickered an eyelid.
"You seem to have plenty of energy left, Elaine. You can help with the healing, too. And you, Nynaeve. You've lost it again, haven't you? Well, you look as if you ought to be carried to bed, but you will have to find your own way. Shimoku, stand up and go to bed, child. Kalindin, you come with me."
"Anaya Sedai," Nynaeve said carefully. "Elaine and I found something tonight. If we could speak to you tomorrow, child, to bed with you, now before you fall down." Anaya did not even wait to see whether she was obeyed. Drawing Kalindin after her, she strode to a groaning man lying with his head in a woman's lap and bent over him. Ashmanela pulled Elaine another way, and Baratine took Angla a third. Before she vanished into the crowd, Elaine looked over her shoulder at Nynaeve and shook her head slightly. Well, perhaps this was not the best time or place to bring up the bowl and Ebudar. There had been something odd in Anaya's reaction, as though she would be disappointed to learn this truly had not been an attack by the Forsaken. Why? She was too tired to think straight. Anaya might have controlled the flows, but Sidar had passed through Nynaeve for a good hour, enough to weary someone who had had a good night's sleep. Swaying, Nynaeve caught sight of Theodrin. The Damani woman limped along with a pair of white-clad novices at her side, pausing where someone seemed to have an injury her skill at healing could handle. She did not see Nynaeve. "I will go to bed," Nynaeve thought sullenly. "Anaya Sedai told me to." Why had Anaya seemed disappointed? Some thought nuzzled at the corner of her mind, but she was too sleepy to catch it. Her steps dragged, nearly stumbling on level ground. She would go to sleep, and Theodrin could make of it what she wanted.